Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to open up talking about literacy and one of the local organizations that have been helping connect volunteers with a shocking number of folks in our communities who never learned to read. We're going to chat with the director of the Literacy Volunteers of Southern Connecticut and invite you to chill out while supporting the cause at their 16th annual Leprechaun Leap at Walnut Beach next Saturday. Then we're going to have a transparent conversation about glass and the role it plays driving up your local property tax bill and what one of Connecticut's waste and recycling agencies is doing about it. We'll check in with the Housatonic Resources Recovery Authority to learn why all its member towns in the region will be separating out household glass recycling starting this June. And we'll close inviting you to be part of the 2020 Connecticut Masters Games, either as an athlete or one of the hundreds of volunteers the games will depend on as they showcase some of the state's best amateur athletes this spring and early summer. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Yeah, well, it's coming up this Saturday. That's right. A number of our Connecticut Connoisseur Media stations are proud to be longtime sponsors of the annual bowl to benefit the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services. It's coming up Saturday, March 7th at the AMF Circle Lanes in East Haven. Umbrella is a program of BH Care that provides services for victims and children of domestic violence free of charge. Serving 19 towns in Connecticut, providing a 24/7 crisis hotline, walk-in centers, safe shelters, court support, community education, counseling, and so much more. Each year, over 7,700 victims and their children walk through the doors of the Umbrella Center looking for shelter, help, and hope. So lace up your bowling shoes. It's not too late. Organize a team of friends, family, or coworkers, and learn more about the 30-second bowl to benefit and the important work of the Umbrella Center by clicking on the events tab at bhcare.org. Well, it's been way too long since we talked with Tammy Jackson, but she has been a long and dear friend to the award-winning For the People. She is Executive Director of Literacy Volunteers of Southern Connecticut. It started off by a different name, but now for 20 years that we've known and worked with this organization, they've been building literacy in the greater Milford and Stratford areas with quality programs for thousands of local adults and children. And it is just amazing, Tammy, every time we talk, because the great assumption, I think, among so many people is that everybody these days knows how to read. But sadly, you know, particularly reading English, if anything, is still quite a challenge for a lot of people. And there are still a certain segment of our population, our communities within our listening area who never learned to read, right?
Right, yes. Yeah, it's a problem. We try to empower adults to make a better life for themselves and their families by giving them some English skills and helping them to learn how to read and write.
So in the long time that you've been with this organization and facilitating these classes and putting together volunteers who want to teach people with people who want to learn how to read, what are a few of the main reasons that you've heard why people just never either bothered to learn or were availed of the opportunity to learn how to read and speak English?
Well, the adults that we serve are two different populations. One, we serve a large group of immigrants that come to the United States and need some help and support with their English skills so that they can integrate into our communities. And another group of population are just adult Americans that have been pushed through the system and maybe never learned the skills that they needed, or maybe they had learning disabilities, or if you think about, you know, 40, 50 years ago, maybe they didn't understand about dyslexia or helping them with some of those skills that now the system understands and has support to help with those people.
Do you find that learning disabilities or just something as solvable as the stigma of not being able to read is what kind of keeps people hiding in the corner and not asking for the help that's available through organizations like Literacy Volunteers of Southern Connecticut?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people just aren't identified. You know, they're not really sure why they can't do those things. You know, yeah, there is a certain stigma, but we try to break through that, and we have volunteers that work one-on-one with each of our students, and so it's very student-based. So if someone needs help with one area or another, that is the part that we focus on. We do have a sort of a set curriculum, but, you know, we cater to the student and what their need is, so every experience is different from the next.
It's also pretty awesome how this group has evolved over the past 20 years. Can you talk to us a little bit about how this whole thing got started? Because my recollection was it was just a few people that saw a need and decided to make a difference.
Yeah, so actually last year we celebrated our 25th anniversary, so we have been incorporated for 25 years. Yeah. We did start out as Literacy Center of Milford, and it was just a small organization that helped people one-on-one. But as we were growing our numbers and students were coming to us in need of help, we realized that they were coming to us not just from Milford, but from other areas of different communities as well. So we opened up a satellite office in Stratford and at the Stratford Library. So we help folks from that area, and then we help people from Milford and all of the surrounding communities. So in total, there's probably about 10 different communities that we have students from, and they come to us from all over. So there's literacy programs all over Connecticut, and we're actually nationwide. So if anybody's listening and is, you know, not in this area, or, you know, maybe has a friend somewhere else, you know, they can always Google or look up literacy volunteers or pro-literacy, and that can help guide them to a place closer to them.
Yeah, but your group alone, I mean, volunteer-driven, yeah, thousands of hours a year given, 100-plus people every year walk out of those experiences with your volunteers with their lives fundamentally changed for the better.
Right, yeah. Last year, our tutors donated over 5,000 hours. So that just shows what kind of work is going on here. Most of it is one-on-one. We serve over 100 people. Last year, we had 130 people in our system and about 82 volunteer tutors. So, you know, we serve an immigrant population, too, which is a big part of our focus. People don't realize how diverse our communities are becoming. For Milford alone, there's 46 different languages spoken just here. So I think sometimes that is surprising to the average person, just how diverse and multiculturally we're becoming. And it's nice being able to share our experiences and support people that are coming to us, whether it's for, you know, they're escaping horrific situations from their own countries, or they're just coming for the American dream and trying to get ahead and work in this country.
You know, I have to imagine that over the 25 years, countless folks that have gone through your tutoring system have become American citizens, but yeah, probably an equal amount, maybe more, have been able to very successfully integrate into the workforce. So I think it bears reminding people that not everyone that comes to your organization to learn how to read English and speak English is, you know, a academically challenged individual. I mean, you're helping some pretty educated people from right, their own cultures assimilate here in Connecticut in the United States.
Right. Most of them are coming with some formal education background. So think how discouraging that is to come to a country and trying to make a new life for yourself. And, you know, you have all these credentials somewhere else, yet you're not able to work in that field here. So we help them, you know, we help them to learn the language so that they can either retake a test so they can be certified, those kind of things. Again, that's how we are very student focused. So if someone is looking for citizenship, we focus on that. If they need their driver's license, we focus on that. If they, you know, need more help with their fluency and phonics so that they can be a better speaker, then we help them with that. So it's great how every situation is different, We have a huge Turkish population and Syrian population that's been coming to us lately, which has been great. They're a really amazing group of people and very kind and generous. One of our couples, a husband and a wife, just passed their citizenship test last week. So that was really exciting. And then they should be sworn in, I think, today, Thursday. So that is a really great accomplishment for them and for us. And, you know, we love to share in their successes for a lot of reasons. I mean, it's great for them, but it's also nice to see how it improves their self-esteem and makes them feel more comfortable and assimilate and really help with the happiness quote. And I mean, you know, make them feel like they're a better part of the community. So being able to speak and understand is a great part of their well-being. So it's very rewarding. I mean, I'm always thrilled to see the wonderful things that they're accomplishing.
Very good. Well, we've got Tammy Jackson on the line for a few more minutes. She's Executive Director of Literacy Volunteers of Southern Connecticut. We're going to talk about a great way that you can have some fun, chill out a little bit, quite literally, and help this organization do more of the good work they're doing. But before we talk about next Saturday's event, as we play this on Sunday morning, let's spend a couple of minutes talking about the two distinct groups that come to Literacy Volunteers of Southern Connecticut, starting with those who want to learn. We talked for a few moments earlier, Tammy, about the stigma. What would you say directly to someone who might be listening that is an avid radio listener but never learned to read or speak English, or their loved ones, because they're just afraid or they don't think that they can possibly learn how to do it at this point in their lives?
Yeah, that is a very common fear, but everybody before them has also felt that way. So I would tell them that they're not alone. And the same goes for our newly trained tutors. So as much as the students are nervous and anxious and feeling awkward in those first moments, so are the tutors. So it's kind of nice that they're both kind of entering into some of these experiences feeling the same way. And then when they start to match one-on-one, then they start to break down those, those feelings. Yeah. And sometimes our tutors end up becoming more of a social worker type setting too, you know, because they like to have that personal touch with them, and that makes them feel much more comfortable. But they should definitely reach out to someone in their area. There's always someone to help.
Yeah. Are you pretty successful in keeping the teacher-student ratio constant?
Oh, we're always in need of more tutors. So I always have students that are waiting, unfortunately. But we do offer a few classes. They're small, like maybe 5 to 6, 8 people. So we try to encourage people while they're waiting that they should be a part of the classes for a couple different reasons. One, it helps keep them participating and at least keeps them enrolled in our program. But it also gives them other opportunities to see how other tutors teach, and one person's style might be different from another's, so it just gives them different ways of learning different styles.
And folks can start learning to be a tutor in just a week or two, right?
Well, so we have a 5-week tutor training class at the Stratford Library that's going to start on Thursday, March 26th, and it'll be for the 5 weeks. It's 6 to 8 p.m., and we have information either at the library or they can call the center or look us up online. Our website is lvsct.org.
Or call 203-878-4800.
Yes.
Next Saturday, March 7th, we want brave, warm-hearted souls to become part of the fun with the 16th annual Leprechaun Leap at Walnut Beach down here on the coast. Tell folks in the last minute or two that we have with you, Tammy, what they need to know about that exciting event.
Sure. So the Leprechaun Leap is going to be March 7th. We register at 9 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, we take the leap. The reason why we fundraise is we don't receive any state or federal funding, so all of our programs are supported by donors and community leaders and community support. So this is a really fun event. There's a lot of people that come down. They help and fundraise for us and raise dollars. Some that are a little too timid to take the leap themselves might have their dog do it, or they find other creative ways. We've got canine leapers, and sometimes people will say, "I'm too timid to leap. Please, like, help me raise $100 so I don't have to go in the water." So it's an interesting way of seeing how people who support our mission try to help raise funds so that we can keep our programs going.
Well, without literacy skills, the abilities to read, write, and do math, solve problems, or to access and use technology, adults will struggle to take part in the world around them, their societies, their communities, and neighborhoods, and they will often fail to reach their full potential as parents and community members and employees. Thanks to the Literacy Volunteers of Southern Connecticut, more people are learning to read, but as you heard, they could use your help. If you'd like to learn more or participate in the Leprechaun Leap or both, go to lvsct.org for the Literacy Volunteers of Southern Connecticut. Tammy Jackson's their executive director. Tammy, thanks for being with us this morning. Well, spring is on the way, and from some of the warm stretches we've had, I think a lot of people have already started about thinking about spring cleaning, even though we're still formally in the winter season here. And those thoughts, along with a brand new and one-of-a-kind initiative that's ramping up in Western Connecticut, has brought me to reach out and reestablish contact with Jennifer Heaton-Jones. She's Executive Director of the Housatonic Resources Recovery Authority, or HRRA, we're going to be talking in just a little while about a one-of-a-kind initiative in Connecticut, at least for now, recycling glass, and that involves separating glass out of what is right now a single-stream type of recycling arrangement. So we'll come around to that in just a few minutes. But first, let's welcome Jennifer Heaton-Jones to the program. Jen, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So what's the boilerplate to help people understand about what HRRA and the various other similar agencies that engage in the work you guys do across the state? So many people recycle. A lot more people just hopefully look for the nearest receptacle and throw everything away. So we want to clear up some misconceptions and clue them in on a few things. But what does HRRA do, and how does it mirror what's being done in all the other regions?
Well, we are the regional governmental waste and recycling authority for Western Connecticut. There are 11 municipalities that we manage, and we help our municipalities stay in compliance with state statutes, particularly helping secure contracts for disposal, which is their responsibility for each of their residents. And we do a lot of public education and outreach so that our residents know what to do with all of that material that may be in their home. And also, in particular, we facilitate all the household hazardous waste events as well throughout the region. So in regards to other agencies, we're very similar in managing and procuring contracts and helping our municipalities, making sure that they are in compliance with the regulations that the state, Connecticut DEP in particular, set forth for our municipalities.
Great. Well, I don't know if it's just the crowd that I run with, but most of the people who I know who get into any kind of a conversation about it are like serial recyclers. And I'm sure you wish that everybody across Connecticut and anywhere is. But in fact, a lot of people just basically still throw everything in the garbage. And that's unfortunate. But today, even some of the kind of casually passionate recyclers may be asking themselves, given the headlines about market issues and how a lot of the places where recycling used to go to be sold, there's fluctuations and reductions in the amount of recycling that these countries or places are taking. So people are starting to ask themselves, well, geez, if we're not able to really get rid of the recycling once we go through all the work of separating it out, why even bother?
Well, first of all, the material in the blue bin should be looked at as a resource first and foremost. And the state of Connecticut has a mandate on many of those items that we put in our blue bin. So it is the law. So we are required by the law to recycle. And, you know, although the markets are poor right now, and China, yes, has a huge impact on the system, the markets are still viable. And much of the material is being managed domestically. There is still a market for this material. Perhaps it's not as strong as it once was, and yes, there's not the same return, just like in any market downturn. But markets go up and markets go down, and right now we do see the worst market conditions we have in a very long time, but we're hopeful that it will go back up. And I love my cereal recyclers. You know, they're very passionate, and that's great, but it's also bad because those are the recyclers who wish everything can be recycled or hope that everything can be recycled. And those are the folks who are putting the wrong items actually in the bin, and how so important it is that when we recycle right. Because that impact to the market that China is putting restrictions on mostly has to do with not that the material itself doesn't have value, but all the garbage that's being shipped with the recycling loses the value of that commodity. So our really avid recyclers need to do a much better job about recycling right.
Yeah, and I guess we're going to talk a little bit more about the contamination of recycling or recyclable materials when we start talking about this new glass initiative. But this is something key to remind people about. You get a lot of calls and questions about what can or what can't be recycled. And I know one of the referrals that you make for people that make these calls to you is a resource at the state level that will not only tell them what items can be recycled, but probably gives them some tips on how to make sure those items are not contaminated by food or other substances so they can be recycled, right?
Correct. We promote that our residents utilize the state of Connecticut's universal recycling guide called the What's In, What's Out. And we have that right on the homepage of our website, hrra.org. And there's actually a great tool that residents can put in any item. It's a widget. They put in the item, type it in, hit enter, and it will come up if it's in or if it's out. Or they can print the guide of what's in, what's out on our website.
Great. Well, we know one of the things that's in, especially through our partnership with Bye Bye Mattress, is mattresses. Mattress recycling is a thing, and it's going really, really well here in Connecticut. I guess at one point we were only the second or third state in the entire country that was doing mattress recycling, and now it's becoming much more widespread. Tell us a little bit about how HRRA looks at and is helping to keep Connecticut in the forefront in terms of mattress recycling.
Well, every one of our towns participates in the mattress collection program. It's free to any resident to bring a mattress to a local transfer station and drop off. And then we help manage to be sure that that material is picked up and taken to a processor in Bridgeport, where it's all the material is separated and everything is captured and reused, repurposed, recycled into a new product.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, folks can either consult our podcast schedule on any of our Connecticut Connoisseur radio station websites and look up our latest conversation with Bye Bye Mattress if they really want to hear a deep dive conversation about that specific type of recycling. But something else that folks are often found piling up in a closet or the corner of a room are older electronic gear, which I understand also are pretty easy to recycle these days.
Absolutely. So just as the mattress is a state extender producer responsibility program where the manufacturers help to take responsibility for the end life of that product, so are electronics. It's actually one of the first EPR laws that we had in the state. And again, residents can go to any local transfer station drop-off and drop off electronics for free. All of that also is on our website. And just to be clear, like mattresses and electronics are all recyclable, but of course they don't go at the curb. They don't go in our blue bin. We never want to put electronics in the blue bin, but we can take it separately to the transfer station and it will be recycled. If you have a hard drive or a computer that you're concerned about the security of your information, all of the material that's dropped off is never allowed to leave the container once it's dropped. It's taken to a secure location, and the first thing they do is shred the hard drive. And if they want to wait for a shredded day, then they can also do that to feel secure about their personal information. But it is a very secure program to drop off your electronics.
And move on to hazardous waste. Now, this is something that is quite a bit more restricted, both in terms of how you want to see people getting rid of it and when and how they can get rid of it, right?
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things, unfortunately, we can't offer every day that a transfer station is open. It's related. So what we have done in the HRRA region is we have expanded the number of events that we offer to our residents from May to November. We used to only offer two. Now we offer six programs. And they're one-day events where you bring all of your, you know, household pesticides, paint, gasoline, diesel, all of the things that you can't normally put in your household trash, and you bring it to those events. Those events are very expensive. They cost the region about $50,000 for the day, and it is paid for by your tax dollars. But because it is so expensive, we're only able to offer them throughout the season, and we don't have a permanent facility. But we do have a few alternative options for folks who are desperate. They're closing on their home. Maybe their parents just passed away and they're cleaning out a home. We can set residents up with other resources, but typically our residents come to a household hazardous waste event in the region.
Very good. We are chatting with Jennifer Heaton-Jones. She's Executive Director of the Housatonic Resources Recovery Authority. The HRRA is a regional governmental waste management and recycling authority serving 11 municipalities in western Connecticut, almost a quarter million people ranging up and down the western border. And we're going to come back and talk about a unique initiative that HRRA is mounting in just a couple of months regarding glass recycling when we return with Jennifer Heaton-Jones. Stay with us for that interesting conversation coming up right after this break. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about a number of them through LoveCT. And if you run, work for, or volunteer at a qualified nonprofit, apply now for a chance to receive a $5,000 radio contract to promote your events or your brand. Just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and click on to LoveCT to learn how to apply for the grant and to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. As nearly half of all workers in the United States take on work in addition to their primary job, Western Connecticut State University is hosting a free talk featuring two local entrepreneurs and a research specialist who have stepped beyond their primary careers to pursue side ventures. They're going to discuss their journeys to explore their personal interests and passions at an Entrepreneurial ARC panel discussion coming up Monday, March 2nd at Western Connecticut State University's Westside Campus. The forum will begin at 6:30 p.m. in room 218 in the classroom building on 43 Lake Avenue Extension. Admission is free and the public's invited to attend. If you'd like more information about the discussion, you can just call the Office of University Relations at WestCon 203-837-8486. Well, thanks for joining us again. Clearly, you may want to learn more about glass recycling, and we appreciate that. Jennifer Heaton-Jones is with me. She is Executive Director of the Housatonic Resources Recovery Authority, serving almost a 250,000 people in Western Connecticut in their region. The HRRA is a regional governmental waste management and recycling authority, and they are this June ready to throw the switch on a brand new program involving glass recycling, specifically separating out glass recycling from all of the other recycling materials. And Jennifer, why don't we start talking about the big reasons behind it? Because it's not just about saving the planet and being environmentally conscious. This kind of issue reaches into the pocketbooks of every single taxpayer, not just in the HRRA jurisdiction, but anywhere, right?
Absolutely. So we pay for our recycling and our trash by weight. And glass is the heaviest material in our recycling stream at up to 30% of the volume in weight. So when we take glass out of the single stream and remove that weight, we reduce cost. And in addition to the cost of just the weight, the value of glass is very high. It's 100% recyclable, but we're not recycling the glass currently, and we are actually sending it to landfill as alternate daily cover, and that's an additional cost. So we want to remove the glass and make sure it's getting recycled at its highest use and save money.
So what's going to be happening starting in June that you've been, had in the works for some time?
Well, the initial plan right now is that we will ask our residents to no longer put their glass beverage containers or food containers into the mixed recycling stream and to collect it separate. They'll have the option to dropping it off for free at their local transfer station recycling center in their town, or they can ask their private hauler to pick it up for them. If their private hauler does not offer that as a service, there will be other haulers who will offer it as a service for your convenience. Glass is a mandated recyclable, so you cannot put it in the trash. It has to be recycled. So those are your choices, drop off or curbside, separate.
So let's talk a little bit more specifically about once this program is up and running, if it is functioning at the level of success you and the HRRA hopes it will. Tell us a few things about it that are going to be happening in terms of what's going to happen. It's not going into landfills as cover anymore. What are the best potential uses for this recycled glass?
Well, our plan right now is for it to go to a company called Urban Mining, which they will crush the glass and use it as a composite in a cement blocks and, you know, therefore recycling it and making it into a new product. There's also still potential that if it's very clean glass, it could be recycled to bottle to bottle. It could be made into other glass products and essentially a higher use than what it's being used for now.
Very good. So let's talk about the integrity of glass and at what point even qualified glass materials couldn't or can't be recycled due to them being, impacted by food or other contaminants.
Well, we certainly want the cleanest glass, and any time we're recycling, we want clean material, and particularly with glass, you know, we don't want bottles and food containers that perhaps somebody put in a cigarette butt or a small piece of paper. We want to keep it clean. It should be rinsed out and put into your bin for collecting. It is okay if the top is on, but we prefer the top off, and we don't want glass items that typically people think are glass, but they're not acceptable, like mirrors and drinking glass and clay flower pots and crystal and light bulbs, window glass. Those are items that actually still go in your trash, but are not recyclable even in your blue bin. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about separating your glass, we're just talking about beverage and food containers.
And folks can go to hrra.org and actually look at the specific types of items, the glass items that can be recycled?
Yes, absolutely. We have a whole page dedicated to this glass pilot program.
Excellent. Are there any other options on the horizon that might be a consideration to create an even more viable conduit to recycling glass in Western Connecticut and in the HRRA's district?
Well, I'm researching just about every alternative and what's the most economical way to handle this. Like I said before, it is the heaviest material in the recycling stream. So transportation is an additional cost. So the further we have to go with it, the more cost. So if we can keep it local and use it locally, even better, a much smaller carbon footprint. So one option that we're considering that has not been decided on, just researching, is looking at a company called Endella who makes equipment for municipalities to pulverize the glass and make it into either sand or small crushed particles that would basically substitute for bluestone for local public works projects like and bedding for piping or aggregate for underneath roadbed or parking lot bed.
Wow, that's great. Have you had the opportunity to talk with any other recovery authorities or similar waste management organizations or even government agencies that are also challenged with the issue of glass and are either have already done or are poised to launch something like HRRA is with the separating of glass materials for recycling in a couple of months?
Yes, it's actually very exciting. We're not the first one to do this. Actually, in Fairfax County, Virginia, they are doing just what we're doing. They are separating their glass from the mixed stream, and they are actually handling it locally using an Endella equipment. And then there are other municipalities in upstate New York and in Massachusetts who are separating their glass and also recycling it to a higher use. Unfortunately, there are municipalities throughout the country who are separating glass out and they're throwing it away just simply because of cost, and they're not utilizing the value and the resource that the glass has. But certainly, we're not the first ones, and yes, I've talked to many other state and local agencies that are looking at doing the same thing.
Ultimately, if you think this glass separation initiative in recycling within the town served by HRRA is successful, do you think that that will be the impetus to be able to take this either to additional resource regions in Connecticut or perhaps statewide in the next few years?
You mean for the program to expand to
yes.
other municipalities?
Yeah.
I would think so. I think that if we can show that it's viable, that certainly other municipalities would take hold. I mean, I would like to mention that the most efficient way of handling our glass beverage and food containers would actually be for it to be included in the bottle bill. And we have a great deposit law in the state of Connecticut, but it is not being utilized to its best ability. And you know, think about consumer purchases the product and goes directly to a redemption center, and that goes directly to a processor where it's being made from bottle to bottle. Bottle bill glass is recycled into new bottles, but glass it is putting in the mix stream is never recycled. The program that we are trying to attempt to put into place to recycle our glass is quite a large undertaking, and it requires a lot of logistics and a lot of money, where the bottle bill would be much more efficient to handle this material.
Well, that's sounds like an important conversation to have, which hopefully we will be able to do soon. For now, our time is short, and we'll need to wrap up this conversation for this morning. But Jennifer Heaton-Jones, thank you so much for all this great information. For anyone listening who wants to either become a serial recycler like all my friends and like all the people, a lot of people that you know, I guess, or whether they just want to start start making those important steps to make things a little bit better and maybe even lighten their property tax bills by taking some of the weight off of recycling and waste management initiatives in their community. Jennifer is the executive director of the Housatonic Resources Recovery Authority, serving almost a 250,000 people in Western Connecticut. We thank you this morning for being on the program, and we'll talk to you again soon, Jen. Thanks. Well, we have oftentimes interviewed with the folks presenting this exciting sports opportunity here in Connecticut. I'm talking about what is this year the 41st annual Connecticut Masters Games, presented by Care Partners of Connecticut, which is going to run through June 30th. This is the state's largest Olympic-style competition for amateur athletes ages 30 and up, and we're going to tell you all about it. Actually, my guest on the line is going to tell us all about it. We're talking with Executive Director of the Games, Patrick Fisher. Patrick, thanks for joining us this morning. And we really appreciate you taking the call and bringing us up to speed on this.
Thank you for having us, John. I appreciate it.
So we say the games, but you're actually executive director of the Connecticut Sports Management Group. Just tell us about the organization that is presenting this 41st annual competition and a little bit about yourself.
Sure. We are a 501c not-for-profit corporation that manages the Nutmeg Games, the Masters Games, football showcases, coaches' clinics, and basically a full calendar of events from January to December every year. I've been with the organization for about 20 years now. I did my internship here and kind of worked every facet all the way up to being the executive director. And what we've been able to turn our organization into in the past 32 years was from a small event in 1989 on the campus of Eastern Connecticut State University with about 1,200 participants to an event that has 11,000 people participate on an annual basis of all ages, from as young as 4 and 5 year olds to we had people in our 90s competing in the Masters Games last year.
Yeah, and I remember talking to you. I mean, you have been a great resource to the award-winning For the People here. You've been, your voice has been on the program two or three times, maybe even more over the years. It's great to celebrate someone not only who has such deep roots in a nonprofit organization that's touching so many lives, not just here in Connecticut, but in the region, but that your tenure, you know, every year you gain that experience and historical knowledge that just helps to identify and eliminate problems that you may have seen before way back in the history of things, while bringing some, you know, exciting new energy to the program. So really great to have you back. So tell us now, you've got 2,000 anticipated athletes. You'll be needing about 300 volunteers and folks to come out and support them all at this year's event. So let's talk about the 41st annual Connecticut Masters Games.
Absolutely. This year, too, we're expecting our largest group of participants this year because it's a qualifier for the National Senior Games, which will be held in 2021 down in Greater Fort Lauderdale. We expect to have a wide range of sport offerings, about 15 in total. Our largest individual sport will be pickleball. We expect about 450 players to come to a new facility that we're using this year, the Rocky Hill Fitness and Tennis Center, and that'll be a 3-day event. And then we offer, you know, an array of other sports, you know, on the team side, 3-on-3 basketball, slow pitch softball, and a volleyball tournament. And then on the individual side, you know, everything from archery to bowling, cycling, racquetball, swimming, tennis, track and field. So we have a pretty wide range. And, you know, one of the questions that we get asked a lot, John, you know, is sometimes, you know, people feel that, you know, they're participating in something just to stay active, and they're scared of the word competition. You know, we get a wide
Olympic
range of individuals.
Olympic-style competition.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes that scares people off. So we get a wide range of competitors. You know, people, again, that are just, you know, participating in something to lead an active and healthy lifestyle. And then you'll get people that, you know, participated at the high school level or college level that are still playing. So this event really is for everybody. And you compete within a five-year increment. So our age groups start, you know, they go 30 to 39, 40 to 49. And then once you get into the 50s, they're by five-year increments. So you're kind of competing in a small window. So we don't want that to scare people off and say, it's not for me. It's for real competitive people. You know, this is for everybody.
Yeah, and you, you know, you mentioned pickleball, which, I mean, looking across the landscape of all of the various sports that are going to be involved in the 41st Annual Connecticut Masters Games, this one seems to have erupted from near obscurity into one of the most popular and go-to sports for folks, 40 plus, and is engaging people perhaps in physical activity or some light, fun, competitive activity for the first time when these folks are hitting their 70s and 80s.
I've never seen anything like it in the 20 years I've been involved with the running of sporting events. We've been running a pickleball tournament for 10 plus years now. Our first one we did down in Ridgefield with about 40 people, I think in 08 or 09. And now, last year, our tournament sold out in a week with about 350 players. It's a craze, and I think we put on a very good event. Our tournament director, Janice Pauly, who is an ambassador for USA Pickleball and just a genuinely great person, does a tremendous job along with our staff to put on an event we have participants from 18 different states that come to this competition every year. So pretty neat to see.
The other thing that I think really needs to be reinforced is that while a lot of these sports are things that people may do solo or with friends, but are solitary in their kind of operation and logistics, like bowling and things like that. One of the sports that you're going to be having in May and June is 3-on-3 basketball, which means that it's not a solitary person auditioning and competing. They're showing up to be part of the action with, in all likelihood, two of their closest colleagues who they've been dribbling and passing with maybe for a few years or a few decades.
Yeah, and that's what's neat. You know, we'll help some people, you know, get on a team or form a team that may not have that camaraderie with a group of guys. But you also get participants that come every year, both on the men's and the women's side for 3-on-3 basketball and for softball, that have been playing together for, you know, some of them 20, 30 years. We have a team on the women's side. It's called the Connecticut Sisters 2, and they're 3-time National Senior Games gold medalists. That come every year. So when they go to the National Senior Games, they're a team to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm. And of course, cycling is another big one that is drawing folks or re-engaging folks that loved cycling as young people, and then it went away for 2, 3, 4 decades, and now they're back into it. I'm really interested in hearing a little bit about how the cycling fits into this. Is this an arena type of cycling race, or is this a kind of more of an on-road or partially cross-country type of situation?
We're very lucky with our host city of New Britain to have a facility like Walnut Hill Park where the cycling's held, where it's a closed course. It's a mile loop. And our cycling event is kind of twofold. We offer a time trial in the morning, a 5K and then a 10K. And then in the afternoon, we have a 20K and 40K criterium. And the time trial is, you know, those are just a set distance that you're looking for a time for. The criterium is a mass start of a certain age group or group of people that goes off for a specified distance or time. So we've partnered with USA Cycling. That's our sanctioning body for that event. And that's really helped us grow the event as well.
Excellent. Well, folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Patrick Fisher, an old and dear friend here for the award-winning For the People. He is executive director and talking about the 41st Annual Connecticut Masters Games coming up through June 30th, starting sooner than we think. The ramp-up is happening now, Patrick. So before we talk about other opportunities, let's talk to the folks that may be considering competing and let them know where to go and what to do to either put their teams together or get signed up and start their training.
Absolutely. So registration is open for all of our sports now. If you go to ctmastersgames.org, you can find information on all our sport offerings and how to register. We offer online registration or also a hard copy registration that we can mail to you. And if you have questions in regard to the competition, how you can get involved, how you can volunteer, I'd love to speak with you. Our office number is 860-788-7041.
And we also indicated earlier, you're actually going to be looking for 300-plus volunteers that can also play a role and in many cases probably observe some or more of the competition at the same time. Can you give us an idea of the range of opportunities for volunteers, particularly for folks that may have very strategic and narrow time windows but who may still want to get involved versus those who may have lots of time on their hands and they can just sign on and be kind of plugged in wherever and whenever they're needed?
Sure. We're looking for some volunteers for probably like a 4 to 6 hour window to help with registration, to also assist with the implementation of the games. So we'll need some people to sit at a scorer's table, help keep score, run a score clock, and then at individual sports, again, to help with the registration, medal presentations, and then to assist with some events, say for track and field. We need some people to help our USA track and field officials with the measuring of jumps and shoveling some pits for the long jump and just some general game day operations assistance our volunteers take part in.
And training is provided?
Absolutely. Yep. And so if you don't have a sports background, please don't let that be an obstacle. We have a lot of people that come and volunteer with us that just want to be involved in some capacity, and we'd love to have you.
You're also partnering with another not-for-profit health team that is Care Partners of Connecticut. If we could just take a moment to talk about the coming together between your two organizations.
Absolutely. So this is the second year that Care Partners of Connecticut will be the presenting sponsor of the Masters Games, and very happy to have them be a partner with us in putting this event on. They're a leading New England organization, part of Hartford Healthcare and the Tufts Health Plan, and it's a unique collaboration for them to put two leading organizations like that to provide high quality care and health coverage, basically for athletes that are right in that realm that compete in our event, 30 plus. So they provide some volunteers and then obviously some financial support to help us put on the games.
Great. Finally, there's some anticipation of thousands of spectators, and we'd like to play a role in helping them connect with the games and the ability to watch these folks in action. Give us an idea of the schedule, when things start, the kind of save the date markers folks need to put on their calendars, and how they are able to come and view all this action.
Sure. The biggest weekend of events that we have is in May, and that's May 15th, 16th, and 17th. Majority of the events at that point are in New Britain. All of our events are free and open to the public. We'd love to have you come and attend and watch some of the games. The sports, again, that you should kind of, put on your calendar would be our track and field meet on May 16th. That's at Veterans Memorial Stadium in New Britain in Willowbrook Park. Also, our pickleball tournament, and that goes on for 3 days, May 15th, 16th, and 17th. Again, that's at the Rocky Hill Tennis and Fitness Center. And then if you want to see some 3-on-3 basketball on May 16th and 17th, we have the men's and women's tournament at New Britain High School. So get to see some good athletes participate in our events.
Well, all we need is the starter's whistle, and we're off to the races. Thanks so much for taking all the time to lay this out for us. Patrick Fisher is executive director of the games. He's with Connecticut Sports Management Group, supporting and for all these many years, hosting and running the 41st annual this year Connecticut Masters Games in partnership with Care Partners of Connecticut, running through June 30th. But as you heard, the critical mass of activities is in mid-May. This is the state's largest Olympic-style competition for amateur athletes age 30 and up. Don't be shy or worried about trying to compete. If you love to play, you should register and participate yourself or with your appropriate teams. ctmastersgames.org is the website to go to learn more about it. Patrick, once again, thanks for being part of the program. We'll see you at the games. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.